All right, so I have to share a secret with you, and you're probably going to lose respect for me because of it, but I've already recorded this episode, so it's too late. My respect is gone. I hate cars. I hate driving them. I hate riding in them. I am constantly afraid they're going to run me over, or if I'm driving, I'm going to run someone else over. I hate how they take up every piece of space outside. Everything is just cars, cars, cars once you leave your door. So for this episode, I'm going to find out what would happen if one day all the cars just disappeared. I found a guy who might know.
My name is Peter Kalthorp. I'm an urban designer. I've been doing it for maybe 40 years.
So I'm assuming he's just going to tell me something like, well, we need cars. It would be a disaster if they all disappeared. The world is the way it is for a good reason. I could not have been more wrong. This is Flipped, the show that turns the world upside down to see what falls out. I'm Alana Strauss. I would love it if you humored me with a thought experiment. If one day cars just disappeared, what would we do? How would the world have to change?
Well, there'd be a huge run on bicycles. I mean, you know, they'd be sold out immediately. You know, it depends on where you are. If you took cars, private automobiles out of Manhattan, it wouldn't be a problem at all. It'd be a better place. There are many great European cities. Don't forget, cars only came to dominate our cities after World War II. We used to build beautiful cities that were walkable and had transit. We had streetcar suburbs that were served by these trolleys. And you would take the trolley out to your neighborhood center and walk to your house. I mean, even small towns existed pretty happily without cars all the time. Elm Street wasn't that far from Main Street. You have to always remind yourself what your perspective is and what you consider normal. What would happen if you took away cars? They would all of a sudden realize that they have a massive reconstruction project in front of them, which is to reuse the roads and redevelop the parking lots and turn their communities into healthy, walkable places.
So why did that change after World War II? Why did we start just investing so heavily in cars?
It was an industrial policy. The Federal Highway Act of 1953, Eisenhower put into place, was a project to kind of take all the capacity that we put into World War II and turn it into industrial activity. You know, without that investment in roads, you wouldn't have had the explosion in cars. We repurposed a lot of munitions factories into automobile capacity. So we had excess industrial capacity coming out of World War II that we turned towards an urban paradigm that seemed logical at the time. You know, why not give everybody a car, a freeway, and a cul-de-sac? And why not reward the GIs coming home with home mortgages as long as they weren't black?
What would you say were the results of that?
Sprawl. We basically subsidized sprawl after World War II. Homeowners insurance and the low-income mortgage were basically designed to support single-family homes, not multifamily homes in cities. And you combine that with redlining, and you have not only a physical paradigm that leaned towards white middle class, but also leaned towards low-density sprawl. And so it was very much public policy, I believe. Simultaneously, Firestone and Standard Oil and Goodrich Tires formed a consortium to buy up all the old streetcars and tear them out of our cities. So our transit network that really created a beautiful hierarchy of city and streetcar suburb was destroyed. And they wanted to put buses in the place of those streetcars, which they did.
Why is sprawl bad?
Oh, the list is almost too long to go for. If you care about climate change and carbon, of course, all the driving, It's astounding. Right now, if you live in a distant suburb of San Francisco, on average, the household is driving around 30,000 miles per household per year. In San Francisco, it's just 7,000. So where you live, what kind of physical environment surrounds you, how close your daily destinations are, drive a huge international global network for oil and carbon. So we became very carbon and oil dependent. Our foreign policy focused on the Middle East because of that. And we, of course, have polluted the atmosphere with so much carbon now that we're on a crash course with climate change. Is that enough, or do you want to know more reasons? We're tending to sprawl out into fire zones that are now destroying homes. The average cost of that American dream, the house on the cul-de-sac in the subdivision, is too much for the working people of America. I actually went back and looked at 2008 with the housing financial collapse, and a lot of people just say, well, it was subprime loans and all sorts of stuff like that. But if you look at the maps of where the foreclosures were, it was always in distant suburbs where people could no longer afford the combination of the mortgage plus the driving. I guess what I'm trying to say is that the American dream, that a working family can afford a distant house on a single family lot, I think collapsed at that point. And we really haven't found the right solution. The working middle class is still suffering and can't quite make ends meet. It's too expensive for the environment, and it's too expensive for the average person.
And you were telling me a bit about how we used to build these beautiful transit-friendly cities or even suburbs where you just take the trolley out to the suburb and then, you know, walk to your house. Can you tell me more about that, like what that looked like? Where was that?
Well, it was everywhere. I mean, L.A. was a streetcar city. And if you watch some of the romantic older movies, it's always the streetcar that's kind of clanging in the background and people are walking to it. Remember that movie, the cartoon, Who's Afraid of Roger Rabbit?
You know, I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Oh, you got to watch it. It's great. It's but it's all about the demise of the streetcars in L.A.
Several months ago, I had the good providence to stumble upon this plan of the city council's, a construction plan of epic proportions. We are calling it a freeway.
Freeway? What the hell's a freeway?
8 lanes of shimmering cement running from here to Pasadena. Smooth, safe, fast. Traffic jams will be a thing of the past.
So that's why you killed that new maroon? For this freeway?
Of course not. You lack vision. But I see a place where people get on and off the freeway. On and on, all day, all night. Soon, where Toontown once stood will be a string of gas stations, inexpensive motels, restaurants that serve rapidly prepared food, tire salons, automobile dealerships, and wonderful, wonderful billboards reaching as far as the eye can see. My God, it'll be beautiful.
You know, I think that people take the physical environment for granted. Every time we pull into a big parking lot, we take for granted that that's a kind of reasonable environment. But every once in a while, if you just stop and look at it, you realize it's really unsustainable and unhealthy on a million levels. Think about kids. Think about the fact that kids no longer can walk to local destinations. They have to be driven. They have to be chauffeured everywhere now. Everything is by appointment if it's not just on the goddamn screen. So the lifestyle changes dramatically the moment it's too dangerous to walk out of your subdivision. It means that the way kids grow up without the kind of autonomy and personal world-making that used to happen when kids went out and roamed. I know it's terribly romantic to think about that. We think, well, the world is too dangerous. But it's actually not more dangerous than it was back in the 60s.
So going back to this hypothetical of if cars were to disappear, what would urban planners, urban designers do differently?
Well, I'd keep doing exactly what I'm doing. Right now, I have a proposal to deal with the housing crisis in California, which is really monumental. Only 50% of the households in California can afford the median rent and mortgage. It's because the housing type is too expensive for them to afford. So I have a strategy to take all of the big strip arterials, and they're lined with single-story commercial buildings that no longer are viable because of Amazon, and surrounded by huge parking lots, and convert those into mixed-use developments, and then convert the arterial itself into a grand boulevard where you have big sidewalks and bike lanes and transit running down the center of the street, and maybe even a lane or two for some cars, and simple things like enough trees so that it's really pleasant to walk and sit on the avenue. This is what cities were always made from before, great public places. So I think we can convert what we have into something great. We just have to be clear-headed about it, and we need to be as focused as we were in the 60s on developing the sprawl paradigm. We need to be as focused on developing a sustainable paradigm. I mean, the good news about cities is that they are the place where human potential is realized. And by every calculation, it represents the smallest carbon and environmental footprint of any settlement pattern. Mm-hmm. So it's a big win. But if we misshape it, as we have for the last 50 years with sprawl and cars and freeways, we start to turn what was a truly creative and positive force in the history of mankind into something deeply negative.
Yeah, I remember seeing photos of your, I don't remember if they were actual boulevards you converted or plans, but I was just so amazed because I'd sort of had this assumption that it's too bad we've built cities the way they are, but we did, so it's too late. And you know, I was just really surprised to find, oh, you can retrofit everything. You can completely change it.
Yeah, actually, easily so. You know, in China, I've been working for the last 10 years on massive new cities there. And we've now succeeded in having them begin to retrofit and redesign into smaller, more human scale city blocks, more mixed use, more walkable sidewalks. And then, lo and behold, why not just auto-free streets? Now, your thought experiment is no cars, but what if every other street was auto-free, was just there for bikes and pedestrians? It'd be a really easy transition to make, and it'd be a one that I think actually people would love. And actually, that's now adopted policy in China, to have at least every kilometer a auto-free street that's dedicated to nothing but pedestrians, bikes, and transit. It's begun to happen at scale everywhere there.
In the cities you've worked in, or like throughout all of China?
It's now national policy. They have a national land use policy. And by the way, you know, in China, only 30% of the households own cars. So the other 70%, why, you know, the question I asked myself was, well, if there's 70% of the people who don't have cars, why aren't 70% of the streets dedicated to them?
I love biking places, and I really love being able to bike to actually get around. I'm wondering, in a world that was more bike-friendly, what would you do in the winter?
Nothing is a 100% solution. That's the mistake. No cars, or it's all bikes, or it's all transit. And certainly there are days when you want to take the light rail instead of the bike. You should have choices. There are days that you need to use the car. But a healthy balance is what we need to get back to. The question is how quickly we can transition back.
How quickly could we transition back if we were all of one mind and just decided to do it?
Oh, I think really rapidly. What's amazing about the Grand Boulevard idea is that most developers, the private sector, thinks it's the right direction. So it's not like government saying, well, we have to do this, it's a hair shirt, but we have to do this to save the planet or because the congestion has gotten too bad or because the housing has become too expensive. Now the private sector says, yeah, this is the way people want to live, and therefore I can make money building housing on those grand boulevards.
If you could just design a city from scratch, what would you do? What sort of features about it would be really different than cities we normally see?
Well, you know, the bad news is I've had that opportunity several times in China. Right now, I'm working on a master plan for Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, where 40% of the territory is already flooding. And if you project out with climate change, you know, that's going to double by 2050. They literally have to begin to migrate the city to high ground. You should create a city that absorbs water and drains it in a way that is beautiful and ecological. 90% of the trips in Vietnam are by motorcycle. The problem, of course, is that they're carbon engines. But now we have electric motorcycles that have literally taken over most of China. 1.5 people on an electric motorcycle is the most environmentally benign form of transportation known to man at this point. So rather than building big expensive metro systems, we're talking about boulevards dedicated to electric bikes. You know, it seems far-fetched, doesn't it? But back in the 50s, the idea that we would build elevated freeways with clover leaves for $10 million, no, more than that now, $50 million a piece, would seem absurd. Would just seem ridiculous. But we did it.
You know, even here, I've seen so many electric bikes and just other kinds of electric devices that I don't even know the names for, like scooter type, skateboard type things. So I could see that becoming really popular here too. What about cities would change if, say, the majority of people started using electric bikes or scooters?
Oh, there'd be a lot less. There'd be a lot more space for people and a lot less asphalt, for one. I mean,
that's very cool. You could design cities from scratch. That's amazing.
You know, it's not what we can do in North America. In North America, the challenge is to go back and repair what we've damaged. There is a kind of a tragic fear now that people say, I've got my space, my place, and I just don't want it to change.
It's funny because the voices that are like, oh, you know, I miss Main Street, I wish America were the way it used to be, that was a place with fewer cars, right? Like, that was a place where things were designed more like Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple, and great urban cultures have always valued those kinds of environments, Main Street and the public square. They're still iconic in our DNA, I think.
Can you give me, like, sort of an image of what this new city would look like? Like, you're walking down the street, what do you see?
What you always can see in a great city is other people. I mean, the most exciting thing about being on the street or being in the cafe or being in a city is that you're mingling. And if you sit down on a park bench or if you sit in a cafe, mainly what people like to look at is other people.
Yeah, I was in the Netherlands recently, and I was in a really small city, and the center of it was all walkable. The whole thing was just walking, no cars, no bikes even, really. It was too crowded. And the equivalent in the U.S. would be like some sort of sprawling suburb. There'd be nowhere where you could get that sort of bustle and life.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The mall was meant to provide that, right? You drove to it, you made your way through a huge parking lot, and then you were in a pedestrian zone. But the malls are all dying because of Amazon, and they weren't deeply satisfying public spaces. As a matter of fact, they weren't public at all. They were private spaces. But you can see the fundamental desire for that kind of experience.
It strikes me that kind of a car-centric design for cities or for towns is kind of lonely, you know, because there's so few chances to actually run into other people in town. The city is just, you know, a way for you to get from point A to point B. You're not actually enjoying the city itself.
Yeah, I think You know, it's fascinating. Everybody goes to these historic European cities or historic cities anywhere on vacation because they love to walk and feel like they're in human scale places that have history and character and this real sense of place. But we don't imagine that we could have that at home. It's strange, really.